Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
VR training platforms, like the one developed by Fundamental VR and Orbis International, are helping surgeons train over and over before operating on real patients.
As you practice each skill, the muscle memory starts to develop.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Ha! Thank you, Lee. Ha! Ooh, I jumped it in.
Damn, that was so startling.
That's well done.
Yeah. You know what? Here's why.
He jumped me.
You have to do this kind of guerrilla warfare to stop Jags talk.
Sunday night, Ravens, 8:20.
Nope. I have a question. I would just say definitely the most controversial thing that's ever been said on this program, because it feels anathema to like our dork heart of college football, was that you, Richard Johnson, will opt for NFL games over college games different times. And you always talk about, oh, I want to see elite and I want to see good play and I want to see this and I want to see that. So as a friend of the program, and I don't have the tweet because it was a couple weeks back, but it is stuck in my brain the way really a tweet hasn't in a long time. We'll just go. I'm going to go because I didn't clear whether or not his actual human, like I have a job and a life name. I know it. But we'll just go with Ivan Baloney. Yeah, his government name. I'm not trying to get in, you know, I don't want the cops on anybody, but Ivan Baloney is an Iowa fan. Okay. Keep in mind. And so a couple weeks back, he tweeted basically that, like, okay, everyone on Saturday in the world makes fun of Iowa football because it's Iowa football, and then everyone on Sunday gets excited to watch the NFL, which basically this year is just Iowa football. Now, everyone knows the NFL team that I spend 3 hours beating myself in the chest about on Sundays. Richard, what is your response to this? Because every time I watch an NFL game this year, I'm basically watching Iowa football, with the rare exception of like two or three teams.
No, this year's tough. Because Patrick Mahomes doesn't have any...
Why is it so Iowa?
Mahomes doesn't have any receivers, and like everybody's hurt. Like everybody's hurt. Ravens are trying to get it pieced together. Hopefully they don't get it pieced together on Sunday night for Sunday Night Football when they play the Jags. Like Trevor's been hurt, battled some injuries. We'll get to Alex's Steelers at the end of the show.
Well, that's the big problem that's holding back the position, is that Kenny Pickett hasn't been playing lately. It would be different.
Quarterbacks writ large, we'd be in a good spot. But no, Joe Burrow's hurt, out for the season. Justin Herbert's hurt and out for the season. Josh Allen, it's been a weird deal with the Bills. I don't know if you, please go read the 3-part long form by Tyler Dunn on the Bills that came out last week. I will not spoil it for you, but there is an anecdote about Sean McDermott telling a story about 9/11.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody knows that now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Al-Qaeda. Look, Al-Qaeda, if you're a small business and you're trying to figure out how do we communicate better laterally, right? How do we keep good flow? How does everyone stay on assignment? I personally think 9/11 hijackers, I mean, you're talking about people who, look, terrorist cells can't have a lot of cross management. Okay. So you have to be very efficient and you have to stay within your silo.
I
can't wait for the Harvard Business School analysis on the interpersonal communications of Al-Qaeda.
I await your tearful apology like Sean McDermott's tearful apology late last week. So, yeah, it's been a weird NFL season. A lot of it has to do with the quarterbacks being hurt. But the other thing is, look, we are seeing this in college as well. Defenses are starting to catch up. Defenses,
yeah, but we're also seeing points and stuff.
Right, but defenses are starting to catch up.
All I know is this. We're going to do a tasting menu, spoiler, at the end of the show. And it is it is a rough schedule, it's, by our standards. Yeah, and in our celebration
with
of this sport.
Spots,
however,
though. With bright spots.
However, we do. Don't spoil it. In counter-programming and getting ready for you to say, oh, I'm just going to watch this game. I looked real quickly at the NFL schedule that's going to counter-program this Saturday's Bulls. Six teams are playing. Five of them are 7-6. And the other one is the Lions. Just want to throw that out there.
Alex, wait, hold on.
Get us out of the NFL.
Hold on.
Oh, no.
Lions aren't bad. Lions are fun. We love the Lions. If you're looking for a team to ride with here, if you're hopping on, we'll get to this, but if you're hopping on the NFL late in the game, up on the Lions. They're fun. We'll get to it later.
I watched.
If you're the one human being on earth who doesn't know what the NFL is and you just wandered in.
No. Not who doesn't know. But I mean, like, if you're about to start actually paying attention to it because college regular season is over, is what I meant.
I am less sure than you are about the fun of the Detroit Lions right now.
That's a fun
one. Agreed. I'm agreeing with Alex.
Anyway, yeah, that's the situation in the National Football League, college adjacent football league that tends to play its games on Sundays. Not Saturdays for antitrust reasons. Transfer portal, collective world, name, image, and likeness. Even though I think most of these payments are not really about, you know, marketing or endorsements. These are, I think it's fair to say, Richard, some of the more chaotic times in college football roster management. Not just in that every year is like this now in December, but in that there are well over 1,000 FBS players, I believe, in the transfer portal right now. And is it right to say that this is sort of different at the moment, like that we are seeing even an escalatory level of roster movement in this game?
Yeah, and there are a couple things at play. The one thing at play that we gotta get figured out is the calendar. Like, the calendar is absolutely insane, and it's about to get a lot worse this time next year, because this time next year, we're going to be doing a tasting menu that involves first round football games, first round college football playoff football games. There's just so much going on. I do think at the end of the day, they will kick the regular season a week forward, probably into August. Then
a week earlier.
Yes. They'll kick the regular season a week earlier in a few years. Conference championship weekend will then be on Thanksgiving weekend, and then there will be a little bit more breath through December for the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the reasons, Alex, it's so crazy this year is because now we have defined windows, right? You can't go, unless you're a grad transfer, you can't, or your coach gets fired, you can't go in like in October, right? You have to wait until, formally, you have to wait until last week, Monday, to go in the portal. So everybody, more or less, went in the portal at the same time. That's some of the reason you're seeing some of the tumult. Some of the tumult, and we'll get to it in a second, is the eighth-year senior, mostly quarterbacks, players that are still in the system, the COVID year, extra years. We'll get to that in a second.
Alex trying to take jobs from good Americans.
Enter the workforce, fellas.
That's right.
The other one,
trying to give jobs to Americans, Stephen.
The other one is,
sorry. Back up. Take two. Alex trying to deny the educational prospects of hardworking young Americans.
Trying to open up a desk in the classroom in the lecture hall for somebody else.
Listen, we SCD reads the jobs report every week when it comes out. We're just trying to increase the surplus.
Y'all's hating on these quarters.
The other thing is the calendar. David Ubbin of The Athletic, a friend of the show, actually wrote a really good sort of column about this that was basically this warning. Like, if you think it's bad now, it's about to get worse. And they've got to and I think it's kind of unfortunate, but I think they may need to reverse the early signing period for high school athletes. Because in the NFL, you do your free agency before the draft. In the NBA, you do your free agency after, before. No, you do the draft first, then free agency July. But to be that as a
matter. No idea.
Go Hawks. In the NFL, you do your free agency before you do the draft. You fill your holes, and then you figure out what you need as you continue to scout. Like, one of these things has to flip. Either the portal stuff needs to go into January, February, or we go back to the old school February early signing period and we give that the juice. But we've got to have, like, there's got to be a bifurcation of how you do the rosters. Like, it's just one way or the other. I kind of think it's got to happen for just like base level sanity of what's going on. I could understand how you could keep the December signing day because recruiting is a long tail thing and you've recruited these kids for 3 years and yada, yada, yada. So you keep the December signing day, but you kick portal stuff into January. I get how that could happen. But I don't know, man. Some of the insanity that you're seeing in the wild, wild west nature of it and yada, yada, yada is just because the calendar is so crazy compressed, man. It is wild.
And why is that?
You're going to talk about no central government in the sport, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And,
I mean,
and
it's not
some
hard,
of it,
like,
some yeah. of it is a shirking of responsibility throughout the years that has gotten us to this point where yeah. things compound upon each other. Yes.
It's not like it's not like we want to hit the same thesis statement every single week when we talk about a subject, but if you want to start the season with the Pac-12 being eaten alive and we're talking about how jacked up this calendar is, in a minute we're going to talk about how, like, not unwatchable, but certainly weirdly contextualized this early bowl season is, it's all because no one is in charge. There isn't even a centralized body, a group of people that are in charge.
Well, also,
this is a truly become ungovernable, as like the idiots at the full cast like to say. Congratulations, this is it.
Also, some of this is because the coaching community wished for the wrong thing when it installed and when it asked for and got the early signing period in what, like 2018 or 2019.
We didn't know NIL and portal were coming, but now
I would note that the December signing period is a small benefit to be able to maybe wrap your recruiting a little bit earlier in the year. But I mean, these guys are all addicts. They're starting for the next year, the moment that they're done with December. And it's not that clear to me that the average high school athlete has actually derived much benefit from this. There was an athlete welfare idea here that, all right, you get the contract signed, you don't have to spend Christmas with people harassing you. I forget when the dead periods technically were, but you know, you get your recruitment done and it's over.
Work.
And that was part of the idea with the December signing period. I don't think it's provided that significant a benefit to anybody. And it's obviously become chaotic because of what we've just talked about with the postseason of the sport, with teams still playing, with the transfer portal window, yada, yada.
I agree with you, Alex. It had good intentions at first. They didn't know that this tsunami of personnel changes were on the horizon when they asked for it. But even when they look, athlete welfare was at the front of it. There was also a very sort of craven desire to have a roster construction, have a better idea of your roster construction as early as you can, right?
Which is
to
fair. That's
get them
fair.
In the boat. Yes. But also, I have pointed out to a lot of coaches who have complained to me, they're like, oh, this is like if NFL free agency took place during like week 7 of the NFL season for next year. And I'm like, well, y'all wanted this. Like, pick something. I'm fine if in January, again, there is no invisible governing body of this complete and total confederation of mess. But if some, you know, divine hand comes and sweeps the calendar clean and says, let's restart. I would advise that if it's at all, Richard, is it even somehow possible to keep the portal and the majority of recruiting and National Signing Day as we know it out of the Labor Day to New Year's window?
I don't know how possible it is because of the school calendar. Like, that's the thing, because the early enrollees show up. Like, you got early enrollees that are going to practice with whoever is in the national championship game. Like, that happens.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like so some of it I get, some of it is a little unavoidable because of the school calendar, but that's the thing. Like, we've got to get, and I think David laid it out in that column that I'm referencing, like, sort of like pick one for December and then pick one for January. Like, January be one period, December be another period. Whether you do early signing in December and free agency in January, or you do free agency in January and early signing in December. Like, pick one to kind of separate.
Why can't they just sign when they want to sign?
Unclear to me.
I mean,
well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why.
Because I've had a lot of banger like good living room dudes in the assistant coaching world just be like, I'll go down there and hotbox his ass right now. And like, then he signed and that's it. Like you are actually physically signed to that school. There is no going back unless there's step 1, 2, 3 things that happen with like the coaching staff or something like that.
I think that's the idea is, and maybe there is some good to that, that you don't want a 17-year-old to be convinced by a smooth talking assistant coach to sign away his collegiate eligibility to a particular school.
And as if being forced to wait 12 weeks and getting phone calls from a bunch of other smooth talking head coaches who flip you at the last minute. Like,
agreed. Not saying any of this is church. I'm just saying that I think that it's like this system requires you to take a beat and think about it, as we're seeing with some young men right now.
I don't think you can proof against impulsiveness.
Right. But you can't proof
against it. But they're 17. But they're 17.
But I sort of think that like letting them sign on the dotted line at will is not exactly the best idea in the world. Like, I think that creates, because then what happens when coaches leave, when like,
no, you have caveats and outs, which I think there should be a rule that if I want to sign in July and I know that I want to go to school X, let them sign in July. If something happens to the head coach, I mean, we can go ahead and make 3 or 4 mitigating factors that would allow the release. So head coaching change, that's the obvious one, / firing, any change whatsoever.
Sure.
Okay. Maybe 1 or 2 things after that. That team just misses a bowl. Instantly release you. Say again.
Team misses a bowl.
Team misses a bowl. My entire future is hedging on whether the school I'm committed to is going to make the Cure Bowl.
What happens if you're AP?
Maybe this is my age showing, but I remember these wild ass late January weekends where you would have kids and families who have been pretty much locked in and committed to a school for weeks and months.
Well, I think that
all of a sudden they go take one extra official to Baton Rouge or Gainesville or wherever. And then like magically shit happens over the weekend. And what's funny is a lot of those holy shit last minute flips are regretted later.
Yeah, but that's going to happen next week too. Like that's going to like, I don't think you're getting that out of the game. Like, I don't think that gets eradicated. To be honest,
I think a lot of coaches would tell you, even when they've been on the recipient end versus the, you know, like flipping or getting flipped on. If you can lock in and get a kid signed, or if a kid in it, like I said, a kid in their family is completely focused on, I want to play for this coach and there's consistency there. And then at the last second, there's some sort of like hot boxing or changing or whatever. Now, keep in mind, I'm talking about an old days world where everything's done under the table. If a kid signs in August, he knows what NIL collective he's going to be with. Potentially, by the way, 2-3 years from now, it could be just the, I don't know if they're going to call it a stipend or a trust or a payment or whatever from the school, right? Whatever those schools in that next subdivision that Charlie Baker's proposed. You have all this out of the way. It's done. It is free agency.
And by the
way,
why
not get this shit?
Well,
hey, Richard, if you want to add to the calendar for college football, have all this shit done before they even start their high school season.
Their senior high school season?
Why not?
I don't know that that's a good thing. I don't know that that's a good thing because of the development that happens with some players in their senior seasons.
Agreed.
They don't have to do it. They don't have to do it.
The lack thereof.
They don't have to do it.
Yeah, but you can't. You can't do that. You can't do that because you're talking about these smooth talking.
Yeah, Stephen, I agree.
Smooth talking coaches.
Yeah. Stephen, here's the thing.
I'm like, very confused.
I'm all for player agency, but not really for 16-year-olds having the power to sign documents that early in life, honestly.
Oh, hang on. No, you guys are mincing words now here. We've talked about player agency as basically the forefront of the concern in this entire apparatus. You can't turn around and play paternalism and say, like,
sure,
you know what? These kids don't know what they're doing.
16?
It's also, these kids are not signing in a vacuum. I didn't say 16. I said going in, well, look.
Before
what,
senior
I'm
year,
sorry,
so a
what,
lot of them are 16.
What life-changing moment of maturity is going to happen between August and December of your senior year of high
school? It's not a life-changing. It's not a life-changing moment of maturity. It's a, we're looking at 5 receivers. 2 of them develop over their senior season. And hey, maybe we'd rather have them. Like, I don't know.
Offer.
And from the coach, from the player's perspective,
then don't
though,
offer.
Okay, but now you're banking on restraint from football
coaches. Yeah. I don't know. It's
no, highly motivated.
If you offer the kid and he signs it and he signs in August, you're both married. You're both locked in.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's going to put the onus on personnel evaluation if you want to do it early. It's going to put the onus on knowing that you're committed to a staff if you do it early on the other side.
Right, but that's a not that on both
I don't
ends,
want to hear about how fucked up the system is if nobody wants to actually go through a commitment process early.
Right, well, but go back and forth and Godfrey, on both ends, that doesn't really make sense. Like it's that doesn't make sense on both ends.
Steven, that's going to lead to runoffs. It's going to lead to players wanting to be in the portal. Like the longer out
that's
from
gonna
college,
anyway.
it's gonna increase it. I mean, if you have kids signing letters of intent.
First off, we have no idea what's going to increase the portal because we don't have enough data on what's going to motivate it.
Sure. But the other thing is, hang on.
It's way more likely that a coach getting fired or leaving is what is going to increase the portal. As long as we see churn in head coaching, we're going to see churn in the portal.
Not necessarily. Yes, but not the most. Like, you got players leaving for some of it now is like extra years, etc. Like, the other thing I think you're missing here, Godfrey, is like you're asking, like, there's so much unknown with the NIL stuff over the table and the amounts and the dollars amounts and the unfortunate kind of secrecy of things and lack of knowledge that I don't know that opening that is not, I don't think that's the way.
Well, I'm not offering the solution in a vacuum. NIL / what are we going to call this thing? The payroll, the stipend, the trust. Yeah, I don't know.
Compensation.
NIL
/ player
payment.
Compensation.
Yeah. Yeah. Player compensation would have to be part and parcel with this. You would have to have transparency. Yeah. You look, I can tell you right now, cause I just went to the convention back in August, the player personnel director is going to become the GM of every college football team that you care about who's on ESPN. And that's going to have to work in concert with your recruiting department. It's essentially going to become the recruiting department. All of these things are going to have to coalesce with one another, or it's going to continue to be chaos.
I think that a lot of this is going to settle itself a little bit more than we realize now in the next few years. I think that this specific moment that we're in, like right now, like this heading into the 2024 season, in maybe another year, two max after this, are going to be the single most chaotic roster management moments that college football probably ever has, because we're in the in-between. Like, we are still dealing with the consequence
I've been hearing that for a long time.
Well, I'll explain why it's different right now. But let me explain why it's different right now. I'll get to it in a second.
There's never been something like what he's about to say. I know what he's talking about. There's never been something.
I'm going to explain what it is.
Yeah.
So we're in the in-between because college sports leaders skirted responsibility, nobody in charge, yada, yada. And the next version of whatever it is, whether it's employment or Charlie Baker's trust idea or whatever, hasn't come yet. So we're in the middle. But we've been in the middle since like 2021, certainly 2022, when collectives started to pop up. I think what's different right now, and this is kind of a sociological point about college football players, is that the players who did not really care about collective cash and about so-called NIL opportunities are starting to age out of college football. And this was a real thing. I was talking about this recently with someone who runs a collective for a program that has won a national championship in the playoff year. So we're talking one of the bigger spending NIL collective operations out there. And this was even this past season.
So there not were, Michigan.
There were plenty of players on that roster, veteran players typically, who just didn't really think about collectives. Correct. And the collective didn't cover all 85 scholarship players. They expect that they will next year because the safety or the linebacker who came to college in 2020 when NIL was still just kind of a dream, a thing that was advocated for, and who certainly didn't expect it when he was a high school recruit, that player is gone. He's running out of eligibility soon, even though the COVID year kind of makes eligibility wonky for a while. And so those players who came up in high school not expecting this stuff, not expecting this money, are just not going to be part of college football at the top level going forward. And that'll still be the case, you know, G5, FCS on down. But I think that you are at a point right now where the portal is, and where prep recruiting is similar, where the talent pool is more loaded than ever with players who expect that you are going to do something significant for them financially.
Okay.
And you don't have the multi-year contracts that come with whatever the next thing is going to be. So you get chaos. And I think it's never going to be as serious as it is right now.
Hang on. Walk out multi-year contract, because there's people listening to that who don't understand what you're saying.
Sure. So scholarship agreements traditionally, long ago, could only be for 1 year at a time, and you'd renew them and you'd keep going. And then in the 2010 right. sometime, schools got the option to offer four-year scholarships, and many of them do. It's not uniform player by player, but many of them do offer four-year scholarships. But because scholarships are not an employment agreement, there's no consequence if a player on a four-year scholarship says, I think I'm out of here and I want to go in the portal. The consequence is that the school can then cancel that scholarship, cancel that aid for the next semester. Obviously, an employment agreement or what have you might be very different. There might be a buyout associated with leaving, but you can't levy a buyout on people that you don't pay. So the free agency
employ.
Yes. But in this case, they don't pay them. The schools don't pay them at all. So I think that the freedom of movement right now stems in part because we're still in that in-between. We still don't have a rigid system for how agreements work in this sport.
You are also talking in terms of labor law right now. You're using phraseology that would basically – yeah, you are. Employment agreements, breaking that, buyout. These are all words that the NLRB gets an erection when they hear, because then they could flood in and create a union. I still believe –
not how the NLRB works. Thank you, but continue.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
The NLRB. No, you're wrong. You're just wrong.
I love
this.
My co-host. I love your fealty towards organized labor, but the rest of us that are awake understand that NLRB is not always operating above board. Okay.
I assure you that during the 4 years from 2017 through 2020, the NLRB was not interested remotely in helping unions form.
Why?
I don't know. It's a big mystery, but I promise you, the NLRB is a regulatory body, but it is also a political body, and it also doesn't have the power to form unions. But yeah, I mean, anyway,
Stephen,
my only point is on basic.
You're right. Okay, sorry. Organized labor has been on the up and up since it began, just like corporations have. There's a concerted effort on behalf of, let's not use the employer word, those with the money right now, to create a compensation strategy. And I also think, like, if you read between the lines on the Baker proposal last week, trust, I think, exists, as the way it was explained to me, to circumvent full-on employment, right?
Yes.
So I think that they're going to have to toe a line here. But to circle back for a second on the broader issue at hand, this is now the fifth or sixth or seventh year, right around Christmas time, that I've heard this sort of zeitgeist complaint of things are a mess. The calendar's a mess. I hear it from the assistants I talk to. I hear it from people in the industry. On it, like even us, like, what do you cover this week? Okay, well, these bowls are fucked because of the portal, and there's this other stuff going on, and there's coaching. Okay, like, right. The sport is ugly and a mess. We said that this year because we had the Pac-12 get eaten alive, like, during the season, basically. I have yet to see anyone propose, even just on personnel, just on the recruiting basis, personnel, so portal and signing high school players, a system, any system, any calendar in which a significant portion of the people involved didn't go, no, we can't do that because X. This is a perpetually imperfect system at best, but now it's just a total mess. So anytime anyone throws out, hey, let them do X or move it all to Y, there's a significant portion of the body that says, no, we can't do that. Absolutely, we won't. The problem is right now, again, it goes back to the joke, which isn't a joke. Everyone involved has been ungoverned. This goes to this. You can talk about conferences this way. You can talk about the coaching associations this way, however you want to frame it. Someone will have to seize control one day, I think, or we're just this is going to continue to devolve. The idea of the market correcting itself, I believe in just a little bit, but not wholly, because this market has never corrected itself. There's too many mitigating factors to let the market clean, like to sort of to do the regulation, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, markets never become like fully efficient, right? Like never maximally efficient. And I do think one thing that really hurts this one is the transparency thing that Richard talked about. And this one sucks either way, because if you say that NIL details, collective deal details, you know, what have you, should be public, then what you're saying is to a college student, I want to see inside your wallet and see what kind of deal you're making. And I understand why people are suspicious about that. I honestly believe it would be to everybody's benefit if there were a way to have a look-see at the way these deals are made, but it's just never going to happen because no one's going to unilaterally do it. And so you're going to have tall tales being told on the parts of players and agents and on the parts of collectives and one day schools.
Wait, so you're saying, so you're saying Marvin Harrison isn't being offered $30 million by Ohio State?
$20 million. It's true. $30 million?
By the way, let's talk about this quickly. This will be great for, sure the TikTok audience will love
Alex,
this.
Alex, I literally had this question. I agreed to do some radio for the Post, and I had to call the Post back and say, can you please not do that to me again? Because I got questions on a political talk show in Pittsburgh where the guy they're like, they're millionaires now, right? And I'm like, well, who's millionaires? And like, all of these college football players. The smarter you get in society, the dumber people are about college sports right now.
I think that it would be very useful and you can use this. Anyone can use this in conversation when someone brings up the Marvin Harrison thing. I think CJ Stroud came up in this context last year. I guess it's always Ohio State fans being hopeful about this. Let's think about this in detail. I have it on very good authority that at the moment, the total collective expenditure for a big time program is in the upper eight figures, somewhere between $5-9, maybe pushing $10 million a year is what a roster costs in college football. An NFL rookie contract, Richard, is worth what? For a top pick like Marvin Harrison Jr., $5 million and change first year. Plus you also get the endorsement opportunities that you would still get in college, except now you maybe get more. Because the NFL is much more popular than college football.
Right. Also guaranteed for first round.
Also guaranteed. And also, critically, if you're Marvin Harrison Jr. or a player like him, the quicker you get to the NFL, the quicker you become a free agent and are eligible for the real big bag in your career.
And it's that variable stat people were trying to explain this to me, and then there's word for it that I forgot because I'm an idiot. But it's like integer variable of if you stay in college, you never progress towards the larger potential of an NFL long-term deal. And then injury being the mitigating factor, and I don't know if I'm using the right words here, you can take emotion out of it. Mathematically, you should always take the rookie deal if it's a day one, day two deal,
and
is what I'm told.
I will not believe – there will at some point be a player – there probably already have been players who stay in college for another year, and NIL money, collective money is a nice carrot for them to do so. But for a first-round draft pick, there will never, ever, ever be a financial incentive to make that decision. The NFL is bigger and richer than college, and the faster you get in, the faster you get to the second deal where the real bag is. That is how you can know that you can quickly dispense with taking that seriously. If someone's talking about as a financial move, why Marvin Harrison Jr. or CJ Stroud or whoever is going to come back to college. Maybe they will, but that's not going to be why.
Yeah, as far as roster salaries are concerned, Alex is right. 3 to 5 range is the if your roster is 3 to 5 million as a Power 5 school, I would say you're not serious. 5 to 10, okay, you're playing ball. 10+, all right.
That's rich.
Yeah. Those are kind of the bands. As far as salary bands on teams, it's sort of like 50K base, 50 to 100, 100 to 250, and then your top line guys. And this is, I'm talking about through the collective, Godfrey, not like with under the table stuff looped in. I'm talking purely through the collective.
Collective is the under the table people, for the record. It's kind of the same people.
But you know what I'm trying to. The thing I'm
talking about. Yeah.
And then 250 plus is like your quarterbacks. 250 plus what we're talking about. There is a differentiation, I think, that people need to realize in what high school players get when they come in as freshmen and what freshmen get who stay. Because a lot of these collectives and teams, they're not giving you whatever bag you think, bag, not money. I'm talking bag, as a high school player coming in. But if you stay, there are a lot of like backloaded escalators on these deals to try to entice these guys to not go into the portal, for instance. So, you know, I was told about a freshman quarterback who came in, wasn't making a lot, played as a freshman, stuck around, and then that deal jumped after his freshman year. So that's sort of how it works. Matt Rhule said, Nebraska head coach Matt Rhule said, I think like a week or so ago, that like 1.52 is like the going rate for like a good, has played college snaps quarterback. That's the top end. What Godfrey's getting at that, is
that sailing. Comment scared. That comment I think has been wildly misconstrued or just filtered out through the echo chamber, and it turned into college football players are making millions of dollars a year, full stop. That is not the case.
You know,
they're not.
Now, a way to alleviate all this is better transparency. And I'm going to be honest, as journalists or whatever's left of my journalism career, we were player advocates because we had fucking functional brains for years, but if they're in the game now, we should be advocating for more transparency with the collectives. Like Alex did mention, hey, like, you know, we do need to know these things just to have an actual honest assessment of the situation.
I also want to be clear, like, none of us are saying roll this back to what was pre-2021.
No.
Just make
it better.
Right.
Yeah.
This is better than net positive. This is net positive. Better than net zero.
Better than net negative. Yeah.
Yes. Better than net negative. But in my opinion, you can't be a critical thinker of the sport if you don't look at this and now say, all right, this was a step in the right direction. It got messy for myriad reasons. I don't really want to go down that road, but it got messy. How do you try to make this better? And I don't think any of us want to do the full Charlie Baker proposal podcast yet. I think we need to wait that out a little bit. I also think that there'll be a time to do it when I go to the NCAA convention in January and have a lot more of these conversations and bring a lot
and conveniently
more
golf your way around Phoenix in January.
That's right. But like, as far as steps in a better direction, could be that this thing's going to continue to move, continue to shake. We'll continue to talk.
There are a lot of quarterbacks in the portal right now. It's funny. Some of them are in Richard and my, you know, maybe time to join the workforce division. Others are like Chandler Rogers, who is going on his third school, but it's a cool story because he started at ULM. He went to North Texas last year. Now I think he's a grad transfer, and he just committed to go and play for Cal. So Godfrey, I just want to get in front
okay?
of it.
Why is that okay?
Because he's not stunting the development of a more deserving quarterback. He's a
Why
great
is he
player.
Not?
Well,
because
we don't know, you don't know that he's not. By
whoa,
the way.
You're right. Probably not.
This got real subjective.
I think
someone's being a coastal elite because this kid finally gets a chance to be in the Bay.
Steven,
after,
I live
after
in the Big
working
Ten.
His ass off
I have
in
lived
ULM
in the Big Ten footprint my entire adult life.
You still do.
Where
by
are you
the way?
Podcasting from right now? Where
do.
Are you podcasting
the Big
from
Ten
right now?
Footprint. He's still in the Big Ten footprint.
Mm-hmm. What part
it's
of
true.
It?
I'm at Steven. Honestly,
the earthquake part of it.
I'm honestly east of. I'm not even to the far west of the Big Ten footprint. It would take me hours to drive across LA to get to where
you
USC
just got
and UCLA
really
play.
Really particular and just and waved off. You gave like a little exception there to one journeyman old graybeard of a quarterback in college that you like. You know what, your path is narratively acceptable,
so
therefore,
let's come back to it. We argued about this a few weeks ago, and Richard,
did you graduate college on time?
I did, yes.
Richard, did you graduate college on time?
I did, yeah.
I rest my folks. No. Pause. There's a significant part of our audience listening right now who just completely got it. Why I'm advocating for one thing, or not even advocating, just okay with one thing, and you two knuckleheads have take like exception with
but
a 6-year.
Richard,
college.
Let me kick this to you.
Guys, what all of these guys graduate with bachelor degrees in 3 years because they all hang out in summers at these schools.
That's not what I'm talking
Richard,
about.
Richard, let me kick. Can I bring up a point and I want you to carry it from me?
Sure.
Godfrey doesn't understand this. The beef with the way that a lot of quarterbacks are handling, or that a lot of programs, excuse me, are handling the portal right now is that it is indicative of them being out of ideas and refusing to develop new quarterbacks. Jeff Sims is in the portal, left Nebraska. He's going to go, you know, hopefully, and I hope he finds another school for his own sake. If you
Why?
Are an FBS program and you give first or second team snaps to a freshman quarterback that you could develop into something. But instead of doing that, you do it for a guy on his third school who hadn't had it work out at either of the
I'm telling you for a fact right now.
You are stunting the development of good quarterbacks in the sport.
I am cutting you off. So everyone in the comments can go ahead and say that. I cut Alex off because I know you guys love that. There is not a coaching staff alive, and there are a lot of coaches who listen to this show who are going to favor or defer to a if you're in a quarterback competition, no one is going to give the edge to someone based on experience through a full season. If you can't play, the freshman will beat you.
So here's
the more talented player will win.
Here's where I think this development thing comes into play. A lot of it is I gotta win now, right? Like we talk, and that's to be fair to these coaches. We talk about this sort of in a similar vein when we talk about like preparing players for the NFL, right? I have always said on this show, it is not your job as a college football coach to prepare your player for the NFL. Your job as a college coach is to win the ball game on Saturday, because if you don't win the ball game on Saturday, it don't matter how many of them go to the NFL. But here's the thing. Florida State, walk it out with me here. If Florida State takes DJ Uiagalelei, who is officially visiting this Saturday and who a lot of people I talk to think will actually be his destination. So you bring DJ in on a one-year rental. If you're Florida State, you are probably going to be playoff good or playoff adjacent good next year. If you're Mike Norvell and that staff, what you're doing with DJU is making a win now move, because Florida State has Brock Glenn on this roster. Brock Glenn is the quarterback who played in the ACC championship game. If you ask people at Florida State who has more upside and who's probably the better player between Brock Glenn and Tate Rodemaker, who was the player who got injured at the end of the Florida game and did not play in the ACC championship game, they would tell you it's Brock Glenn. So in a recent past, before you had guys able to go on their third school, sixth, seventh year, Florida State would go through the growing pains of Brock Glenn next year.
Yes.
Brock Glenn would be playing next year. But
theoretically taking a step back entering the following season.
Yes.
Correct.
But what Florida State's probably going to do is you're going to take DJU on a one-year rental. If he can play, he's going to play the whole year. And then Brock Glenn doesn't get those snaps. And hell, maybe Brock Glenn leaves next year. Like, that's where I talk about the rosters, like, especially in the quarterback room, because one guy plays and only one guy can play. Like, we don't build rosters at that position specifically with a baked in notion that guys are going to be there or around for more than 4 years. And that's when, like, we don't, it's not built for guys to be on their third school, seventh, eighth year. And what I'm saying is this is sort of a blip on the larger college football radar of, you know, 100 years or whatever, because once these COVID guys rinse out, we're going to go back to what we've always sort of kind of known. But that doesn't change the fact that right now it's pretty fucking crazy that DJ Uiagalelei, Dylan Gabriel, Bo Nix this year, Hank Machmeyer, Max Johnson, Jeff Sims, Jordan McLeod, like, these guys are on their third year, and that's just a taste. So there is a there is that notion in my mind about how does what's happening at the quarterback position and with quarterback transfers on their third school, sixth, seventh year change, alter the development at the position? And by the way, how does it change the evaluation of these guys on the, like, I don't know how, and I, you know, I will talk to some draft friends as we get into Bo Nix's draft process, but how do you weigh that Bo Nix just has 60 starts? Like, if you do something 50 odd times, you better be good at it.
Well, he
at
is
least
good
at this
it.
High level.
He, one thing I want to point out, Richard, because you just, I guess, picked Florida State because of DJ's visit. And I can hear the growing din of Florida State fans screaming at their podcasting device while they light another Winston 100 and adjust their ankle bracelet on the way to community service. Go Noles. You are proposing a situation in which Florida State becomes deeper at quarterback. Can I just ask again, what was the reason we were given why Florida State, undefeated, two wins over the SEC, was left out of the playoff?
Yeah, but Brock Glenn still doesn't have snaps. Like Brock Lynn still hasn't. Yeah,
they actually aren't really getting deeper. They're not getting deeper at quarterback than they were this year. They go from Jordan Travis and
you're right. So so you're advocating they go that they become shallower at quarterback.
No,
you think that's what they want to hear right now?
It doesn't matter because if Brock Lynn still might leave next year. Like it's not.
He might, I'm a Florida State fan right now, the one anxiety I have is, shit, we better have 9 quarterbacks on the fucking roster that look good since we lost we got fucked. Well, they did get fucking fucked.
Yes.
By the eye test in a Power 5 conference championship game. Sure. That's the problem. Again, the fun part of this fucking chaos that we're living in right now is that you can build a point, which you just did effectively and intelligently, and then another part of this circus from hell completely changes the context for it.
Right.
But so the postseason system in this case is telling you, you better be fucking stocked at the skill position.
Not necessarily because next year's postseason system has a built-in buffer for teams like Florida State.
Richard, what would have happened this year if Florida State got bumped from the 4 to the 5 in a 12-team format? They would have had Rotemaker with a concussion having to play earlier. It still sucks, and they still would have been done. They still would have been done wrong.
But they would have made the dance, which
they would have made the dance. But I'm saying the consequence of 4 to 5 on that eye test, which is that's not my logic, that's the committee's logic.
Sure.
Still would have affected them negatively.
You know, right, Steve,
I don't think Florida State fans don't care because the difference is making the dance and not making the dance.
Also, I think Florida State fans aiming for a national title would have definitely cared about losing a bye, playing an extra game, deficient at the quarterback position. I definitely think they would care. Yes, right. They would definitely want the easier and better road to get Rotemaker healthy in time to play in the second round instead of the first.
But they would
this
have
isn't fucking
gotten,
rocket science.
They would have gotten in.
Also,
their goal was not to get in. Their goal was to win.
Yes, it is to get in. Because they're all pissed
to
they
win.
Didn't get
when
in.
It's to get in and win. Florida State believed that they were going to hang. They were going to bang with Michigan. This is not like an edge case year where it's like we deserve to, like Cincinnati or UCF, where it's like we deserve to be a part of this. And wink, wink, we're going to get
Steven,
fucking killed
by Alabama. I think there is something to be said for when the playoff gets bigger. I agree with you, Florida State fans are going to be mad if they're 5 and they think they should be 4. But I do think that, take the basketball tournament, for example, whoever's 69th instead of 68th and doesn't get in, they're pissed. Their fans are mad about it, but it does not leave the same imprint that being left out 5th in a 4-team playoff does in college football. And I think that a smaller version of that is that whoever finishes 13th going forward is not going to have quite the same righteous indignation and fury that Florida State has over being 5th and 4. I think as the number gets bigger,
have you been to the South?
You just move the debate. I have been to the South a few times.
Wait, you're saying there won't be righteous indignation about the 13th team left out
next year? You've
been
doing this all show today. I say something and then you say, so you're saying thing you didn't say. I agree that they will be mad, but I think that there's a different...
You said righteous indignation, though. You did say that.
Yeah, I did. And what we're seeing right now, when you are left out 5th in a 4-team under sketchy reasoning that says that the games on the field didn't matter, is a special cocktail of anger. That in general, when you finish 13th instead of 12th, yes, your fans are going to be furious. Yes, there will be mad press conferences by coaches who are left out, but it's not going to be the same perfect storm that happened in 2023.
I agree with that on principle. It's just that Florida State's I think we would all agree this is the most egregious omission of the playoff era, right? Like this is the outlier example. Yes. Like there's nothing that comes close to this.
To
Alex's point, compared to that, it won't be as bad, I guess. Yes.
There is one caveat to that, by the way. I do think the type of 12-13 we have is going to, like, pretend a Georgia, for instance, or some team in that station, right? Pretend some team in that station has 2 or 3, close losses or 2 losses that happen in September and they run off 8 straight and they're
undefeated
really
in regulation. 2007, undefeated in regulation.
Yes, undefeated in regulation. Yeah. That I will say is going to get hairy when we get to it. If that's like a 12-13 and it's one of these like big teams that you sort of know conceivably probably could win 3-4 games in January, but that's going to be a part.
Keep going. Because I want to add on to what Alex wrote last week. It's not the conspiracy you think, which is if one of those teams, if we're in the edge case on 12-13, Alex, you wrote about this last week. All right, how about this? If we're in a 12-13 scenario instead of a 4-5 scenario, Alex.
Yeah.
You wrote about Greg Sankey's ability to go on the multi-platform pulpit that is ESPN because of his sort of favored nation status, right? He's not going to be in there lobbying on behalf of Alabama to get the 4 instead of the 5. He's going to be in there lobbying on behalf of like Missouri or Ole Miss
to get the 12
instead of the 13. And so you will see the same conspiracy theory, same frustration, and I think honestly indignation if they bump out like a it doesn't really matter. And why I like your column last week, by the way, splitsonduo.com. We do writing. That's our new slogan. We do writing sometimes. I think that's prescient because what if it's a Big 12, like this new sort of flotilla Big 12 that it doesn't have the media platform that the SEC has and they're going head to head. That's when what you wrote about gets like kind of like way scarier. SEC versus Big Ten, we've seen that play out, right? What if it is like that third SEC team making a field of 12 versus like a really overachieving, I don't know, fucking Arizona State or Baylor or something like that?
Yeah, it's probably going to be more than three. I take your point, but it's going to be like there will be years when the SEC lobbies to have six. Like they're going to try to do that.
Yeah. Anyone who thinks that the playoff expanded to include more representation is kidding themselves. It was expanded specifically to cater to two conferences.
Yeah, with carrots, but I think I principally agree.
Yeah, Liberty would be. I think they would be playing at like I don't know, Oregon or something.
They'd be the 12th seed. They'd be playing Florida State, wouldn't they? It'd be 12 versus 5 in the first round.
There you go.
I didn't even think about that. They really would, I think, right?
That's what it would be.
And we come full circle.
I want to talk quickly about a few schools specifically and their portal situations, but we'll try to move quick because we do want to taste it this week. Richard, really? The Florida Gators, they have issues right now? they always have issues.
Oh, it's an evergreen segment.
The biggest thing with Florida, like it obviously matters. It's part and parcel. Florida has Billy Napier has got to get this signing class over the line. If you're hanging your hat on this signing class is serious and this signing class will be the thing that it's the thing that you point to when it ain't really going good on the field and you're saying we're the youngest team in the country or the youngest defense in the country, which is what they've been saying all year. But we're bringing in young reserves. You got to get the signing class over the line. They got a 5-star safety from Texas who is getting poked at by Texas, among others. LJ McCray is another player who I believe is from Central Florida. He's getting poked at by Auburn. Florida's crown jewel quarterback, 5-star quarterback from the state of Texas, he's getting poked at by some schools as well. It's that time when it's coming to the end and you got to get this thing over the line. Early signing day is the 20th, so we got a week. It's December 13th right now. But the Trevor Etienne thing is tough. Like Trevor Etienne
entering
the portal is tough.
Allegedly.
Where he goes, I think.
What was that? Alex, what was
well,
that?
Well, no, he's talking about where I think Trevor Etienne is earmarked.
No, I know. I just, can you do it again?
No, that was
good.
Thank you.
I wasn't making fun.
When I visited Athens, as Trevor Etienne might be doing.
It was like a really low, but it was like a very polite, like two Georgia fans greeting at a funeral sort of bark.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's your check-in and your drop-in on Florida. It's as far as one team to really watch here, as far as getting this thing home and over the line in the next 7 days, you got to have all eyes on Florida because this is crucial for him and for that building. People are going to lose their shit if they do not. Like, it's going to be really, really bad.
Isn't it crazy how we had a big finger quotes from the YouTube crowd, light year in SEC turnover, and we are going to walk into Labor Day weekend with just absolute crosshairs on Arkansas and Florida, and that's before anyone else does anything else.
That's before we
kick. And it's not like situations are good in other places like South Carolina.
Right. By the way, you know who Florida plays week one?
Mm-hmm.
I assume nobody because it's Florida and it's week one.
No. Alex, I used to make that mistake because I grew up in the like let's play Idaho era. Like, Richard, you want to drop it?
The U, baby. the U.
Interesting. Interesting.
Dude, you want to talk? Yeah. Hey,
who's gonna?
Are we gonna have our first ever Week One Anxiety Bowl?
Dude, that game is a procedural nightmare on both sides. How many?
No shit.
How many false starts and illegal formations?
Which is also the motto of the state of Florida.
Management decisions will there be between those two coaches in one game?
Dude, you could have multiple. You could be like a hockey game. That game could be like a hockey game. Like they would have to establish a penalty box for like defensive personal foul penalties.
Speaking of the ETN family, Alex tells me that the Clemson Tigers are portaling now. They're in the business.
I did a tour of Clemson's recruiting sites this week because this was one of the things I was interested in learning. Not a lot of action yet, but apparently Clemson has what they are calling portal targets. And apparently Dabo is interested in players who have previously played college football for other programs. Very interesting. Going to see where this leads for the old Clemson Tigers. I'm not sure if there's a kind of a religious testing that goes on prior to entry. I'm legitimately not sure. Dabo would surely tell me that's ridiculous.
The drive-through dunking, you got to do the quick dunking. That's like the more I almost said progressive. It's a more modern Baptist thing. But you can't do the full Riverside. It takes too long.
If I could be fly on the wall in any coach AD meetings this offseason, it's Clemson. It's Graham Neff, the relatively new AD there. Remember Radakovich, who was kind of Dabo's partner, is at Miami now. Now it's this new AD. Did he have
Remember
to tell Dabo?
Hired too, Alex.
What's that?
Remember, they just hired on that coaching staff too.
Matt Luke.
Oh, Matt Luke from from
Matt
Ole Miss.
Luke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And the
but
lake.
George. So it's yeah. Yeah. It's so if you don't understand the significance of Matt Luke, I swear to God, someone at Clemson. I don't even think Dabo hired him. I think someone figured out Matt. You speak enough Dabo to explain to Dabo how to do it in the SEC. I swear to God, that's the genesis of this entire thing. I obviously don't know that.
Do you mean how to do it like an SEC team, or you mean like to try to like, you know, flirt with the SEC?
Oh, that you wouldn't hire a coach for that. I think this is more like roster construction and management, sort of like, because even in the freeze era at Ole Miss, Matt was like sort of the 1-1A ace recruiter, living room guy, and then also like really ask Kirby about Matt Luke in Georgia. Like this is a hire that I think is a friendly way of taking some of the executive function and personnel maybe away from Dabo, or just making him listen to another brain.
He's a head coach on the staff. Like he's a head coach in the building on the staff. That like you can joke about what Matt Luke did at Ole Miss in his three, which by the way, he was a head coach of Ole Miss for 3 fucking years. Anyway, I like it.
It's the probation years at Richard. It was the last significant probation before portal and NIL. So you had to absorb the hit. So it's like, that's when he was an offensive lineman and they finished in his third year. They had like 7 offensive linemen on the whole fucking roster because they were on probation.
It's crazy. Anyway.
So he knows what it's like at Clemson. For a crime he did not commit.
By the way, that's also a position fit because Clemson's offensive line, a longstanding sort of issue, even when they were good. And obviously that hasn't gotten a lot better. So he will be useful for them. Richard, speaking of offensive line.
Yeah. And I've said multiple times on the show, Georgia's offensive line has been like the most underrated thing about this entire 3-year run of dominance.
He's a hell of an O-line coach too.
Colorado. Speaking of offensive line, as Alex said,
woo!
You said he needed to get offensive linemen. We said he needed to get offensive linemen. Hell,
this is one way to do it.
He said he needed to get offensive linemen, and by God, he has gotten offensive linemen. They have portaled 4 guys already since the portal opened. 3 of them came from fired staffs. I think that's noteworthy. Now, what I don't know is who Colorado beat out for those guys. I just don't know that. But the fact that these guys came from fired staffs is noteworthy versus guys who were jettisoned out. One of them, however, is if you've got a guy coming from a team that didn't fire their staff, you may sort of lean, oh, he got processed out, he can't play. But if there's a guy who came from a staff that got fired, you may lean more to he left on his own volition. Even though it's not good business practice to let good offensive linemen out of the building, even when you come in as a new staff.
Which is why we were told for years, you can't portal an offensive line.
We are going to find out.
We're going to find out.
We are going to find out if you can portal a capable offensive line. The other lineman, another lineman, the fourth transfer lineman that Colorado got is a center from UConn. Obviously, that staff was not fired, but he's a center from UConn who played next to one of the best guards in the country.
They're firing themselves, Richard.
At UConn. And then there is the crown jewel. Jordan Steen, five-star high school offensive lineman, number one tackle in the country. Jordan Steen went to play at IMG. He comes in as well. So they really have portaled a new offensive line. They had, I believe, at this point, two starters who have left. Deion sort of did the pack your bags thing after the UCLA game, I think.
Nice guy.
And so we'll see. But like,
sportsman of the year.
This is, we're selling magazines, baby. I got to keep the lights on in here. We're seeing if you can portal a full offensive line and have them be capable players. But Jordan Steen, I think it's a small thing, and I've mentioned this before, but Jordan Steen goes on Undisputed and mentions, why not come help somebody who looks like you? And it's just something that I'm going to think about. New offensive line coach, Phil Loadholt, played at Oklahoma, played with the Vikings, black offensive line coach. All these offensive linemen they have added are black. It was noteworthy a few years ago when the Raiders played five black offensive linemen, all starting five black offensive linemen, including the center. Colorado actually
had Rodney Hudson
last year.
Big star.
It's just something that's in my mind. It's something that's in my mind, and it's something you should consider about the appeal of Colorado and the appeal of Deion Sanders, among many other things. So we will see if you can truly portal a capable, good offensive line.
The Nebraska Cornhuskers. This is going to be a fast-moving situation. The chances of it of this podcast segment becoming dated quickly are high, but there is a good deal of reporting and rumor, but also real reporting right now that suggests that Nebraska has a chance to not just get Kyle McCord, the Ohio State quarterback of this past year, who wasn't terrible but obviously didn't cut it at Ohio State, which is why he's not at Ohio State anymore, and also, much more interestingly, Dylan Raiola, who is the son of Nebraska assistant and longtime pro lineman Dominic Raiola, and who is verbally committed to Georgia. Connect some dots here. Richard talked about it earlier. Matt Rhule talked about how expensive it is to get a good quarterback in the portal, $1.5 million to $2 million.
Ain't got a hometown discount.
Now, I don't think that Kyle McCord costs that much money if he goes to Nebraska or anywhere else. However, Dylan Raiola, unless he is being poorly advised, which I am guessing he is not, could command quite a lot of money from whichever collective school he heads to in the next couple of weeks. And the fact that Nebraska, whether his dad works there or not, and he does, is still in this race for this guy and might get him, is indicative that Nebraska would like to play ball at the big boy level of collective spending. That's not surprising. If you've listened to our Dead Letters series,
nope,
that sort of goes back in Nebraska history. Those folks will spend money to have a good football team. And I think that they are prepared to do that here.
When NIL launched, I remember having a conversation with someone on an SEC staff, and just as an aside, unprompted, apropos of nothing, I remember him saying, man, you know who's really going to make this, who could really make this work? Could. And I was like, ooh, they're like, Nebraska. Mm. Like that's a fan base you could convince to like do $100 check a person kind of like, you know, funding for athletes. They're like, that could bring Nebraska back to relevance. I remember that. Before. And then at the time I was like, Scott Frost, not a fucking chance.
They've done that $100 a person before. Alex did a podcast about it on our Substack
page, right,
which is interesting.
Prisoners paying to build stadiums.
Literally. My favorite anecdote.
Literally. No,
from
it's
that.
Not a joke. That's not a joke.
The thing with especially like Nebraska here is the concept of taking both of these guys, right? Like Dante Moore also on the portal. Like I've heard some, like you may take two and you let Dante Moore sit for a year and develop because he's a raw player, and then you take somebody else who can play now, right? It's sort of a similar thing with Nebraska. Nebraska, take McCord now, 1 year rental, Raiola develops. And that's, we'll see if they can do it. I mean, it would be an absolutely massive coup for Nebraska to pull that off. I mean, it just would. The quarterback situation this year, I mean, you saw it.
In generalities, if you are making an NIL splash for a really big prep quarterback, I think one of the interesting things is what Richard talked about earlier on this program, which is how is that deal structured to encourage your continued participation at that school beyond 1 year? That's part of the deal. And doesn't always work, as we just saw with UCLA. I don't know any particulars about Dante Moore's dealings with UCLA people, but I would assume that if Nebraska pools resources to make a splash to get two of these quarterbacks, one who is in his third year on a college campus or his fourth year, I think third year from McCord, and another who's right out of high school, you have to have a plan, like a succession plan, basically, to make sure that all of that devotion of time and resources is worthwhile. Matt Rhule seems like he probably would. I think. That silence hanging there is not making me optimistic.
No,
I'm terrified for Nebraska. I'm terrified for Nebraska that this is somehow going to wind up sad.
I'm good on it.
I hope it works out for him. I've developed.
I just feel bad for when Kyle McCord transfers after 1 year at Nebraska, and you guys say he should, like, I don't know, join the Merchant Marines or something.
What is the thing? Somebody asked me about this the other day. What is the selective service? Somebody, like a friend of mine, sent me a TikTok, was like, do you know your selective service number? I was like, what are you talking about? And I completely forgot that was a thing.
Yeah. You guys know you had to do that, right?
Yes, yes. But now I'm like in high school. Okay. 25, so it expired, right?
I believe so. Yeah, we're fortunate in that regard. We're safe. We're on the other side. Splitzoneduo.com.
You guys are getting drafted before me.
Splitzoneduo.com is the home of our premium content for this podcast. It also now includes a newsletter. I've been doing about one newsletter a week for the last several weeks. Really, really enjoying the tools that have become available to us on Substack to provide the best possible premium product to all of you, our generous, wise, and supportive subscribers. You can get a month free if you sign up for an annual subscription. And it is a tremendous way to not just support the show, but also to get a lot of insight from Steven, from Richard, even from me on stuff that we don't always talk about on the free show, but we oftentimes reserve for our paying subscribers. And I think it's a tremendous deal and you should sign up for it.
Got an eyes list coming up, Alex. Richard and I are going to kind of put a bow on things. We're going to do, I think, a different eyes list episode this week. There's still a lot to talk about in the, I guess, dying of the light of this particular carousel.
Eyes list.
We asked each other a question about a job that was just filled that I think is really intriguing and sets the table, among other things, for who does grab that cursory G5 spot for the next 5-6 years in the playoff system. So I think the way some of these jobs are being treated is very interesting. We're gonna have more of a conversation as we sort of, I don't want to say put a bow on this carousel, because like,
we'll have a surprise. There's always a surprise.
Weird things happen. Alex, speaking of weird things always happening and a surprise, organizing on January 6th, always a good idea. SplitzoneDuoLive.com. We are going to Houston, Texas, in advance of the national championship game. National championship is on a Monday. I can't help that. I can't control it. I know it sucks. Everyone asks me about that as if I have some sort of like ability to change that. Saturday night before.
I don't know why. Everybody gets really weird about why the everyone gets mad being on a Monday night. It's weird to me.
It kind of sucks, dude.
It's fine. I used to care.
I kind of think it sucks ass. Like I think the same for the basketball being on a Monday night. I know why it is. I understand all the reasons why they do it. It's all television based. It's pretty shitty, to be honest with you. Anyway, before that, on Saturday night, on the good night, we're going to be hanging out Split Zone Duo Live in Houston. Biggest show ever by far. We're announcing guests soon. And then also I'm announcing that there will be announcements at the show. So get ready for all that.
Announcing that there will be announcements at the show. That's big. That show is brought to you by our dear partners at Home Field Apparel. Are we all in uniform today for our YouTube audience? I've got my Home Field crew.
Go Miners. Go Miners.
Richard's got a home field crew.
You guys are just doing good brand. Did you coordinate good brand? Was I supposed
we
to
We never
do that?
Coordinate. No.
Okay. Well, I have a UTEP shirt on that's fucking awesome in it because it's got that big 90s font on it. So
no, it's fair. It's very good. It reminds me almost of like that old Vancouver Grizzlies logo.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice font. The very first one. It's that vertical font. I've asked Connor about this. Like, has a particular time and it's like late 90s. It just kind of dies out around the aughts and like bringing it back is great.
Damn. Now I kind of want to do an SCD 1990 shirt. We can pretend we were the only podcast in the world that existed in the 1990s, back before podcasts were even a thing.
Were all of us alive in the 1990s?
Yes, by a certain point. If you go to homefieldapparel.com, use the promo code SCD20, you can get 20% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. That's SCD20 for 20% off your first order. I'm also thrilled at the live show to be with our friends from Nokian Tires. And if you are driving there, I strongly recommend that you do so on a set of safe, high-performing Nokian tires. Incredibly important this time of year. In a lot of the country, road conditions have gotten to the point where you really don't want to be out there with anything other than the trustiest, grippiest, best set of tires you can possibly have. And that's where our friends at Nokian come in. Looking forward to seeing some of them and our buddy Wes from Nokian in Houston on January 6th.
Dog, I was sweating through a snowy drive on non-Nokians a couple weeks ago. Let me tell you something. Would have been nice to have them Nokians under the feet. Would have been real nice.
Your local dad here has 18 hours of driving coming up for the holiday. You know, some might say visiting relatives. Some might call it a death march. It really depends on if it's me or my wife talking. Anyway, regardless of what you're doing or why you're doing it, guilt-induced travel. You're doing it and you should do it on Nokian tires. I'll be in the South, but I'm going to be honest with you. It's actually worse because I think road conditions are worse in the South. And if you get just enough rain or like cold rain, like freezing rain, man, nobody knows how to drive. So you need defensive reactive tires that work with you. I always feel confident that I'm driving on Nokians and I drive a lot of human beings on Nokian tires. That should be their new slogan.
Completely concur. Don't drive anything else myself. Richard. What time is it?
It's not. It doesn't feel
we don't want to do it anymore. Oh God, the national nightmare ends.
It doesn't feel the same. We're tasting it. I mean, we like what we taste.
I'm gonna let you in on a spoiler.
Well, Richard's watching shitty NFL games. Let's talk about some fantastic.
No, this is a good college football Saturday, but not so much at the FBS level.
Yes.
So let's talk about it.
All right, we got to tempo this a little bit, Alex.
Yeah, please.
We will tempo it. Yeah,
get us through.
We got to tempo this. But Alex, start us with the Celebration Bowl, okay?
I want to chew on the Celebration Bowl for a moment longer than we will probably a lot of the FBS Bowls. It's a national championship game, the Black College National Championship, and it is contested this year between two schools that have not been in this game, Howard and FAMU, both first-time Celebration Bowl teams. FAMU was in, you'll remember, the FCS playoffs a few years ago, something that can only happen if the MEAC or the SWAC produces a non-champion because the champions go to the Celebration Bowl. That is good enough to make the 2014 bracket in the eyes of the committee. This is a chance for FAMU to do something that used to be commonplace. They won the Black National Championship most recently in like 2003, I believe it was. But back in the 50s and the 60s, under a coach by the name of Jake Gaither, that's another dead letters plug on the Substack, FAMU was a legitimate dynasty, one of the great college football programs in the history of this whole sport. Jake Gaither built a pipeline of not just playing talent, but playing to coaching talent that he used to not only build great staffs and great rosters, but to repeatedly replenish his team with players who went to high schools where their coaches had been Gaither's players at FAMU back in the day. This was back in the era, obviously, of segregated college football, where Black high schools in Florida became a feeder system to FAMU, and the Rattlers became just an incredibly successful program under Jake Gaither. Things changed drastically as Gaither got older and key as integration took hold in the sport. There are two different ways for integration to really change things for a program. One is to be Ole Miss. One is to be FAMU, if you understand the difference between those two situations.
What do you mean by that?
What's the difference?
It's an interesting question. And if you are in the situation that FAMU is in, I think since integration, it has been, with some high points, with a few high points along the way, a really hard slog to get back to being a winning 1AA, now FCS program. And FAMU even briefly tried to move up to FBS, did not go well back in the aughts. So this is kind of FAMU with a chance to get back to a pinnacle that used to be really commonplace for them, but has not been in a very long time. And I think that is very exciting. It's also a good team. They got a good quarterback by the name of Jeremy Musa, who I think was the best player in the SWAC this year. And they just rolled over the SWAC. They're 11-1. Their only loss was to USF, like a week before USF almost beat Alabama. So this is a very impressive team. They are the favorites in this game.
The thing with FAMU here that I think is interesting is like they've gotten so, so close to this game. I mean, they were 1 point away in Dion's, I believe, second season in charge at Jackson State from beating Jackson State, and they would have gone the year that Jackson State went. They've gotten really, really close to this. And Willie Simmons, who's been there for a while, has had a crack at some FBS jobs, just like Larry Scott, who is Howard's head coach, has had some cracks at some FBS jobs. But Willie and FAMU have been really, really close and finally get this breakthrough. For me, it's strike, and strike again on Saturday.
Yeah, I think FAMU is going to win the game. Howard is 6-5. They won the MEAC. That is great for them. The MEAC has oftentimes, I think every year until last year, has actually been the winning conference in this game in the seven or so that they have played. But I think that Howard might find itself just a little bit outmanned here, would be my thought. Quentin Williams, good quarterback, has had a good year. I just think FAMU has a deeper roster than Howard, and that's likely to materialize in this game.
We're going to talk about FCS playoffs in a second, but this is not like I think the Celebration Bowl is great. I would 100 out of 100 times rather see these schools in the FCS playoffs along with the Ivies, I might add. I really, really, really don't. I really think that FCS is doing itself a disservice. I'm aware of the history and the context for both the Ivies and the HBCUs.
And the money.
The idea of schools like the Dakotas and the Montanas competing against SWAC and MEAC schools, competing against Ivies, competing against, the random, Cinderellas like a Albany, who we'll talk about in a second, is to me an awesome representation of what this sport can be. So I'm not shitting on the Celebration Bowl. It's great. It serves a purpose. It also has a financial identity, let's call it.
It does.
For these schools to do this. And so I don't want to take that away. I do dream of a day in which you can combine all of these representations of college football that are incredibly diverse in many different ways and then have them all play against each other. That would be cool.
You actually don't even, I do dream of it too, but it happened. This was the way of the world before the Celebration Bowl. FAMU actually won back in, I believe, the 1970s, the very first 1AA playoff system year. The Rattlers were on top. I agree. It would be fun to see. I've talked to people who are very invested in HBCU football who do like the Celebration Bowl. I've talked to a lot who have your worldview. Glad it's not for me to decide, but this is a game that will have a lot of passion behind it. And you could decide national champ other ways.
There's a thing where white media doesn't want to criticize anything to do with HBCUs, and I get that. But at the same time, like, there's a better way out there.
There is a powerful notion, however, on the flip side of the for us, by us nature of the Black National Championship and the Celebration Bowl that has deep history. I'm not saying I know you know, but I'm putting that out there. I know you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
think I love the idea of like FAMU versus Montana at either campus. Like that to me is like, that's why we do shit in America, is to figure out how to make all these things sew together.
The Celebration Bowl is, Richard's right, sort of the successor to something called the Orange Blossom Classic that FAMU also became synonymous with, that was played, I believe, at the Orange Bowl. I think it was played in South Florida for a lot of years. It's a cool game. Whatever you think of its involvement, of the league's involvement in the FCS playoffs or not, it's a cool game. And there's a national championship on the line. So I'm going to be watching that on Saturday, and I think it'll be fun.
All right. I guess I'm watching this game on Saturday. It's the Myrtle Beach Bowl. It's Georgia Southern and Ohio.
Drop the clutch. Move us. Well, hold on. Because Alex, you made a really good point last night about why this hodgepodge, like Myrtle Beach Bowl, Georgia Southern versus Ohio, NOLA Bowl, Jacksonville State versus Louisiana, Avocados from Mexico. Cure Bowl, Miami, Cure Bowl, Miami, Ohio plus App, Starkhole Brands, LA Bowl hosted by Gronk, Christ, UCLA versus Gross. Boise, Independence Bowl, Cal versus Texas Tech. All right, they're all a hodgepodge. Alex, can you explain your very salient point about why they're really a hodgepodge?
Because of the portal. I have never been a there are too many bowls guy in my life before, and I'm not all the way there now. I'm not all the way there now, but I do think that we've got a situation here where I hope that the players who are still playing in these games are excited to be playing in them in the way that players have typically been excited to play in bowls, because a lot of their teammates are not playing in them. That's just the way of the roster management calendar in the sport right now. There is not a bowl game among these that does not have numerous crucial players on both teams not playing. And, you know, that makes predicting these things pretty hard. But I also think that there will be, I don't know which of them they will be, but there will be a couple of these that probably work out to be pretty fun.
Oh, I can tell you which ones will be good to watch. Unfortunately, it's the ones that aren't in primetime.
So the one that I'm most compelled by is the Cure Bowl. That's Miami of Ohio against App.
Sorry, I think it's, please use its government name. The Avocados from Mexico Cure Bowl.
The Avocados from Mexico Cure Bowl. The Cure Bowl was a great bowl last year. It was Troy against UTSA last year. And a bunch of Split Zone Duo listeners and I got together in a dive bar in Washington, D.C. and watched that game. And it was a great game. And we had a blast. And Troy won that game. I think that this could be that, except, like, I don't know, Avion Smith, the Miami backup quarterback who came in and led them to a MAC championship after Brett Gabbert got hurt. He is in the portal. Nate Knoll, App star running back who kind of got Wally pipped a little bit after getting hurt this year, is in the portal. App still has some guys, Joey Aguilar, Caden Robinson, quarterback and receiver. Miami plays good defense and plays great special teams. That might be the most appealing of these games to me, but it is a bit downgraded because of how many important players are not playing.
I'm not going to tell anybody to watch Myrtle Beach. I will be watching this as a Georgia Southern fan with sort of like chin tucked, arms crossed. Georgia Southern has lost four in a row. They became bowl eligible in October, which is never a fun fact for a 6-win team. Figure out the math on that one. They were essentially just humbled by App State, who's also playing this weekend. This is just all the shine is off the Helton Hire. And I don't know of like a 10 a.m. bowl game in mid-December being a must win for anybody, but just all of the hype off that hire is basically gone. I don't even know if winning will necessarily change much of that because it is the 10 a.m. Myrtle Beach Bowl. The game to watch here, boys, I think, is going to be the New Orleans Bowl with Jacksonville State and regular Louisiana. If there's a little bit of a tradition now, and it started, I think, before Napier with Hudspeth, but when ULL gets this particular bowl game, when they get to play in the Superdome, which means a lot if you're in Louisiana, all of these like deep, deep Southern Louisiana people, like Cajun Creole folks who never go to quote unquote the big city in New Orleans, they flood into New Orleans for the day. It's a huge celebration. They usually pack the dome out, which is pretty cool to see in one of these minor bowl games. Also, on the other side of that, which is even cooler to me, is like you have a team going to their first FBS bowl in Jacksonville State. They're fun to watch. I mean, I always like to watch a Rich Rod offense when it's functional. So, it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be kind of wild and pointsy. It's going to be fun, I think, just for a casual sort of flip by. If you're looking for the white Slayton offense, it still exists. It's just Zion Webb and Malik Jackson. They are the team's two leading rushers. It looks basically like that West Virginia team that you remember from all those years ago. ULL is fine.
Except they
this
don't
year.
Make Owen They're, Schmitz anymore in this sport, which is a real shame.
They do not. There is no Owen Schmidt at Jacksonville State currently. Is there any Owen Schmidt other than the man himself? Probably not. No, is he still running that bar so. In West Virginia?
He is not. I have lost touch with him. I hope he's well. Yeah,
it's fine. UL's fine this year. They're not Napier level. They've rotated quarterbacks a little bit. They're still sort of under the Napier level with their native son Desor Moe. And
Michael,
it's going to be the most watchable. Like, here's the problem, and I'm going to go a little off script here. Alex can break down why UCLA and Boise is essentially toothless. And spoiler alert, it's the portal, it's defensive coordinator changes, it is interim head coach becomes head coach, uncertainty in both programs, both underperform relative to their standards this year, even though technically Boise wins the Mountain West. This game is on in primetime, and I have to go to a Christmas party that I'm being essentially dragged to, and I know I'm not alone in America. So the reason why bowls are great, not the acidic predatory bulls like the Rose and the Fiesta who like hold up change in the sport just because sunsets are neat. It's because like having college football on when you're in an awkward situation is the greatest safety valve in America, at least the part of America I'm from. Giant flag unfurls behind me. Okay. So I'm going to be watching this to avoid extra human contact, any more human contact than I have to have, being like, oh, what do you do? Oh, yeah, I own a podcasting company. All right. For the Washington. Oh, okay, cool. That's awesome. You're a lawyer, whatever. So I'm going to be watching a game that is going to essentially be terrible. Like Boise is starting a true freshman, CJ Tiller, a true freshman, because their backup was hurt and their actual quarterback, Taylen Green, is now playing for
he's in the portal. So Taylen Green, I think, basically won the Maddox Mattson quarterback competition as that year went on, but he is
no Taylen Green's playing somewhere else. Like he's already out of the portal. He has a new team.
Oh, I will catch up with that.
Talk
in
amongst
August.
Yourselves.
Please take us to the FCS.
It's a whirlwind. Before I do that, I would just know Independence Bowl at night, Cal, Texas.
Arkansas. He's playing at Arkansas. He's Bobby Petrino's new quarterback. Good luck, Taylen Green.
Interesting.
What a dumb fucking decision
him.
You made.
Hey, Cal and Texas Tech.
We got to acknowledge this. Holy shit. This is a game on primetime.
Cal and Texas Tech, bit of a culture clash there, Berkeley versus Lubbock, but it is a good running back game. I think Jaden Ott for Cal is playing. One never knows. But he still has more eligibility. I expect him to keep playing for Cal going forward.
God, this is the most Shreveport-ass game.
But he is great. Like, he is one of the best players to watch in college football. You have in our notes that Taj Brooks is back here for Tech, Richard.
Yeah,
so
he did. He just announced that he's coming back for Tech. So it's a running back centric game for two teams that basically ran the air raid for most of the time that you remember them. It's not going to be good football, but it will be on. So therefore, there's no such thing as bad pizza.
Yeah, so the Sunday Dykes Cal moment, that was a thing that happened. That did happen. Those were years that elapsed.
That did happen.
FCS, interesting set of semifinals.
Yeah, baby.
North Dakota State at Montana in one. South Dakota State hosting University of Albany in the other. NDSU first, very hard to kill.
Classic.
Very hard to kill. They destroy
South
Dakota.
What did I say 2 weeks ago?
That they're hard to kill?
That there is such a thing as like the muscle memory of a roster and a program that understands the playoff bracket. Have proven that.
Yeah.
Now,
and they
here's the deal.
Destroyed South Dakota.
And here's the deal. I understand what happened against Montana State. I was the one who brought it up. But boys, have we ever seen this before? Where, and by the way, this is an FCS classic in every single way, and I love the fact that it's outdoors in Montana, which is like picturesque FCS football instead of it. I don't like the Fargo Dome. I don't like the Kibbe Dome. I want all of those games to be outside. I know that's an unpopular thought.
No, that's fine. I'm with that.
Boys,
I'm with that.
Have we ever seen this situation like we have with Ince? And my assumption is that he entered into the conversations with USC thinking that they would get bumped early, because this isn't a, hey, I'm leaving. And this is the last game, boys. This is it for me. I'm retiring or I'm leaving. We've seen that before. Yeah. This isn't the last game.
I'm dipping.
This is a team that could be playing in January.
I'm dipping to be a position coach without,
but like in a minute,
defensive play calling. Yeah, in a minute when we're done here.
That's the weird part to me. I'm like, how do you motivate and like regulate and discipline and like all that shit goes out the way where it's like, well, that guy said he's going to quit basically as soon as we lose. So does he want us to win? Like, does he care if he goes out with another national title? Like, these are legitimate questions you could
probably
ask if you're an NDSU player. It's
so
weird.
Probably so. This is a budding Missouri Valley against Big Sky rivalry. These teams have played a good bit. NDSU has gotten them a couple times in the playoffs. This one is in Missoula, and the last time that they played in Montana was 2015, right kind of in the midst of NDSU's dynasty becoming a full-on dynasty. And Montana won that game. They got him there. Montana is actually, especially now that granted, Montana is not close to Southern California, but now that I'm in this general half of the country,
thank you.
That's a place that I would kind of like to. That I would really like to get to a game. I would really like to get to a game there. What I'm winding up to.
We have friends.
It just looks beautiful.
We have friends who, Alex. We have friends who listen to the show at Big Sky, and I think we could do an entire SCD from a Montana game. I think all of us would have a blast doing that.
That shit cold.
This is, oh, stop it. You live in fucking Brooklyn. You live in a cement shithole. It's frozen half the year. Okay. Jackrabbits and Great Danes. This is I just want to point this out really fast before Alex does the football part of this. Nobody probably saw this, but a weird thing happened last week in the Albany-Idaho game. Everybody likes those stupid pregame. Well, they're not stupid. The access things. Like, the, remember when Dan Lanning was like his live speech before the Washington game?
Yeah.
So that happened the Colorado, in the Yeah. That happened in the Albany-Idaho game. And the Idaho coach was basically telling his players, I've already got my bags packed and I've got warm clothes packed, because what he was like yelling this to his players, talking about this week's game, because you're going to be on the road. It's at South Dakota State, outside, I might add, like a badass. So he kept saying, I've got my bags packed. The Albany staff, like they're like video people, cut this up after the game, as you do, did a little shit talk of like that quote with the strip sack that ends the game and Albany going into victory formation. Now, here's the cool thing. Everybody gets their ass bent out of shape about like what someone like Dan Lanning says, or what like someone like Kirby's cussing too much, or like it's the dumbest thing in our sport in terms of like you want the access and you want to know what coaches are saying. You want all that. And then you get mad about what's said, or you think it's like cheap. These guys are trying to motivate these kids. And I thought it was really cool this week because the Albany coach, I was doing research on this game, was basically like, yeah, I saw it. I didn't take any personal offense to it. And then also, apparently the Idaho head coach hit the Albany coaching staff on Twitter and was like, I already had some, be sure to pack warm gloves, because all the stuff I had packed was warm. Like, ha ha, like, hey, you got me. And then the Albany staff wasn't like, yeah, fuck you. They were just like, hey, I get it. He was motivating his players. We had a good laugh about it.
We're all adults.
This is what happens in college football. Dude. We're all adults. Exactly, Richard. And they just moved on, and everyone, there was no blood feud. There was no like vendetta. It was like, we had a good time. Let's move on.
Look, and I haven't Greg seen Gattuso that at the FBS Pittsburgh.
Level.
The What's Albany that? Coach is from Pittsburgh, where That's you're going to have a little bit of, you're going to have a little bit of dust up. Yeah, Greg Gattuso. He actually stopped in Maryland as well. So he's doubly, I don't know him, but he's doubly my guy, I guess.
He's all over you, Kirsch. Because I spend a good portion of my time in that rough sort of northeastern part of New York, I would love to see Albany win, just because when I tell people up there what I do for a living, they look at me like I'm from fucking Mars. It would be cool if that region got into college football. This is a defensive minded team, boys. Also, I think South Dakota State is a 21.5 point favorite. So that kind of gives you an idea of where this thing's headed.
Yeah, South Dakota State is obviously, I mean, they're fantastic all the way around. They're the defending champs. They're number one. The thing to watch there is the running back pairing, Isaiah Davis and Amar Johnson. This program just churns out good running backs. Pierre Strong, a couple of years ago, was the latest. He's in the NFL now. These two guys are just bulldozers, and they're behind an offensive line that blocks it up for them.
They also, Alex, Albany also like churns out edge rushers. Like, I don't know if these
two
guys...
They have a
good
front. They stop the run, too.
If these two guys are like Jared Verse part two, I don't know the deal here, but Albany, there's something in the water there. They got some good edge rushers.
I think South Dakota State's, I think they're going to have a hard time getting through it in this game, but we will see. In the Division II title game. Also, I need to apologize here.
I'm excited.
Last week, I said that the Division II bracket had been chalk. I neglected that they actually reseed round by round. So it had not been completely chalk. There had been a few upsets in that.
Everybody needs to reseed. Everybody needs to reseed. It's one of the things I don't love about the FCS playoffs, by the way. Reseed, or the FBS, excuse me. Playoff.
Dude, it kills Major League Baseball. Reseeding, it kills the baseball playoffs.
Good. Reseed.
Where it has wound up is where it probably was heading towards winding up, by which I mean Harding is 14-0. They have set the Division II record with like 5,600 rushing yards this season. They are a flexbone team. They have thrown 54 times all year. They run the triple. They run it well. Cole Keelan, their quarterback, is a good player. Godfrey, their coach, a guy named Paul Simmons.
I'm so excited.
Just like cut a wrestling promo for the flexbone.
I can't believe, dude, they're going to make me cheer against Mines. I can't believe I'm going to do this. Like, I love Mines, but dude, the Harding, go look it up.
Hold on. We already retweeted it. We'll play the clip here. Anthony, let's roll this clip in 3, 2, 1.
People love to attack the flex bone because it's not cool. It's not fancy. You know, how are you going to recruit receivers and a lot of these things. But I can promise you this. When I'm choosing an offense or a defensive style or whatever else, the thing that I want to be about is winning the ball game. And, you know, running the flex bone is pretty good if you care about winning. I think you see today one of the main features of it is about you've got to be unselfish. I mean, you know, we had so many guys that were a giant part of the attack today. And it just, it fits who we want to be, the toughness, the discipline, and the unselfishness. And, you know, awesome shout out to those guys on that offensive staff. They just work so hard and care so much, and they have the guys ready to go every week.
I mean, literally my blood's like, I'm ready to go through a fucking wall. Let's go. And I'm ready to go through a wall or pitch it out to the next guy who's going to go through a fucking wall while I block down.
Mines plays a very different style of football. They chuck it around 300 or so yards a game, which in Division 3 is quite a lot. Division 2 is quite a lot. I'm jumping ahead in my notes, causing me problems. I like a stylistic clash. This will be a stylistic clash. John Motoka, fun quarterback for them. Got a cool mustache. Even amid snow piles last week in Golden, Colorado, where they play, they threw for their typical 300 or so. Team that likes to chuck it around against a team that likes to run over you, playing in that very nice McKinney, Texas high school stadium for the national title. And in the Division 3 national title game, the Stag Bowl, North Central is the defending champion. They survived a substantial scare last week from Wartburg. They are playing Friday night against Cortland, which blew out Randolph-Macon. That's from Godfrey's childhood neck of the woods in Virginia. That was supposed to be a pretty good game where people thought that Randolph-Macon could give them a run, and Cortland did not tolerate that. So North Central is trying to be the wire-to-wire number one in the polls and repeat as national champs. Cortland is trying to pull what I think would be a pretty significant upset. And the challenge is that North Central just scores and scores and scores and scores, like 60 points per game score. There is a chance that they will break the Division 3 record and go over 61.5 points per game if they have a certain kind of output here. It's in Salem, Virginia. North Central is from Naperville, Illinois. Cortland is from New York. Intriguing. Good way to spend your Friday night. I think North Central is probably going to give it to them. But again, I'd love to be proven wrong.
Let's go, Cortland.
Let's go, Cortland. All right, to get us out of here, Saturday NFL, what I will actually be watching. I'm not going to be watching the early NFL game. The Vikings, Bengals, no sir. I will be watching the Celebration Bowl in the early slate. But Steelers and Colts, intriguing. Alex, how do we feel about the middle game here? The husk of the Steelers in the playoff hunt, trying to amass wild card clinchers? How are we feeling about the old black and yellow?
Intellectually, I know that the best thing for this franchise is to lose out and be forced to make changes. But emotionally, obviously, I would like to make the playoffs because it's fun to watch your team get destroyed on wild card weekend for some reason, because we're humans and we like pain. So let's see if we can get it together, fellas. Let's fix things.
Shane Steichen, by the way, and the Colts, they got something going on, and they don't even have Anthony Richardson. They got something going on. And then Broncos, Lions. All right, we finally come back to it. What is it with you guys and the Lions? The Lions should be your upstart. Like, you guys should be, you know, embracing them, especially you, Godfrey. They're playing Sean Payton.
Why?
Because Sean Payton has resurrected the Broncos, and the Broncos, I think, have won five or six.
Fuck him for a week, but I'm not trusting anything from Michigan.